Good morning, Ed Donaldson from Pegasus Bay Wines. How are you, Ed?
I'm great, Julian, and hi, Suze. Thanks for asking me to come on the show. Stoked to be here. Over in Melbourne at the moment, I'm over here catching up with my son. So in the neighbourhood, Simi.
What part of Melbourne?
My favourite. Over in the North Kent area.
Nice. Very nice. You'll be tasting some lovely wines. Do you get time to get to like the Yarra or Mornington or anywhere like that?
It's not on this trip. It's a personal trip, really. Just catching up with my son that he's over here in his 20s. So I sort of get over here pretty frequently, once every month or so to catch up with him. So it'll be more of a family focused sort of trip. So I won't get out to any wine regions this time, but.
Well, actually, that's probably a really good place to start. I'm actually going to hand over to Suze in a moment, but it's a good segue into what I love about Pegasus Bay wines, apart from the fact that the wines are so good, and all the critics believe so as well from what you read, is that you are such a family base. You know, you really started the whole family thing. It's all your siblings work together in all different areas, and that's pretty special to be able to do that. You know, is there no sibling rivalry that goes on?
Well, look, it's a bit of a look. We've been working together basically we planted the vineyard together back in 1985. So I was only 10 years old back then. And now years have gone on. Different family members have sort of joined the business at different times. But yeah, there's actually 7 family members that work together and sort of key roles for the business. So, I mean, it's a recipe for an absolute disaster. It seems to work remarkably well. I mean, we've all very much got our own areas. I think one of the main reasons it works so well is that none of us want the other person's job. We're all very comfortable in what we do, and I think that really helps. I mean, look, of course, we have our moments. We're only human, but we're pretty good at talking things through. There's always a glass of wine or a bottle of wine to sort of help lubricate things as well. So
always sorts out, and you're not stepping on toes. Okay, that's good. Well, we're here to talk about you and your wine. So, Suze, I might hand over to you, and because I know you've got some questions, Fred.
Look, I do. I guess the first thing I'm kind of intrigued, saying you planted in 1985 and you were 10 years old, I was going to ask you, you know, how young were you when your parents got you to start? But it looks like you were 10.
Well, it was a bit older, actually. I was born in 1975, and my dad actually planted one of the first vineyards in Canterbury. It was one at the same time that Lincoln College, which is our sort of our main viticultural and enology school in New Zealand, planted that same year. So that wasn't Pegasus Bay. That was a little hobby vineyard that he planted in the outskirts of Christchurch in a little suburb called Hallsville. And so, I was like basically zero when we sort of started, being brought to this vineyard and Dad sort of tinkering around in the garage. Dad was a neurologist, so that was his main sort of career. And yeah, basically got into wine as a hobby, and he sort of bought a block of land after travelling around Europe. He was on sabbatical over in the UK and travelled around a few of the regions around Europe, and just really fell in love with, in particular, some of the sort of cool climate regions like Burgundy and the Mosel and the like. And so when he came back to New Zealand in 1975, he was only over there for a year or two. He came back and thought, the climate here is not that different. There wasn't anything planted there at the time, and there was virtually nothing happening up in Marlborough. But he thought, let's give it a go, and planted this little 1 acre vineyard with a group of friends. So we were all as kids kind of drawn into that. We loved it. It was the outdoors, and we probably weren't doing anything of any particular help to them, anything very constructive at that point. But it was great to be around it, and as I say, great to be outdoors. And we sort of grew up really enjoying it.
And so you were, if I've got this right, you were previously a chef.
Yeah, when I left school, I trained as a chef in Christchurch. And when I started at the winery, when I must have been about 20, I think it was 20, around about 20. And I started as a commie chef there. So I worked under our first head chef was an English chef. And back then, we closed the restaurant over the winter, over four or five months a year. And so I was born in London as well, well, when my parents were over there on sabbatical, so I had the British passport. So I sort of went back and forth quite a few years. I did about 6 years of working New Zealand, summers, and then over to the UK and worked in kitchens over there. I eventually took over as head chef at Pegasus Bay and ran the kitchen there for a good few years, probably way younger than and way less experienced than I should have been at the time. So got thrown massively in the deep end. But, yeah, really enjoyed that. And I ran the ran the restaurant from the kitchen, basically. I was running the managing the restaurant and recruiting all the front of house staff and the kitchen staff and doing what was the marketing back then, which was pretty crude sort of. There wasn't, we were just selling in New Zealand back at that point. And I was doing the sales sort of around our Canterbury region as well, and on the 2 days that I wasn't at the chefing at the winery. So it was pretty kind of crazy times back then. We're trying to do way too much and probably not particularly great at any of them, but just keeping the balls up in the air. And eventually, as time went on, I've sort of passed various. I came out of the kitchen and just managed a restaurant, and then I passed my restaurant on to my now wife, who was my maitre d'. She took over about 15 years ago, and basically got to a point where I could just focus on the marketing, and I still oversee the cellar door sales as well, just do the recruiting and training for the cellar door as well. Can just focus full time pretty much on the marketing now.
So love bloomed in the kitchen. That's actually really cute. So I've just got a quick one for you. What is the link to music? When I'm looking at your range of wines, you have aria, virtuoso, prima donna, maestro. What is that link?
So that's a bit of a nod to my mother, Chris. She's a hugely passionate opera lover. She sung for Canterbury Opera, just in the chorus. She calls herself a chorus girl. She sung for about 30 years in the chorus. She was on the board of Canterbury Opera for about 20 years as well. She was quite instrumental in sort of developing. Yeah, opera in our region back in the day. We've had a number of operatic concerts out of the winery as well. When we were kids, we grew up with just opera blasting out of every room in the house. When we drove up to the winery, there was just opera blasting at full blast in the car. There was just absolutely no getting away from it. So so we thought it was a fitting sort of tribute to Mum to call our reserve wines that we make just in the best years after an operatic name that we think sort of depicts the wine style as closely as possible.
It does fit very nicely. And just one more on that. So, some people do say when it comes to growing things like flowers, viticulture, that playing music can help. Was that ever a part of it or not at all?
I'd like to say yes, because it sounds very romantic, but we also have another brand called Main Divide, which we also have quite a close association with New Zealand music, we put out a New Zealand music compilation every few years, and we work very closely with different artists there as well. So I think that the style of music there probably represents the next generation, my generation, sort of a bit more than the passion for opera of my mum and dad.
Right, yes. Everything evolves, doesn't it?
Yes.
And the garden. I mean, I don't know if you've been there, but it's beautiful. I mean, I had a wonderful lunch down there. Paul, your brother, was, and Angela, who was at Greystone at the time, we had the most incredible lunch there. And just the gardens are beautiful, the cellar door, it was incredible. So did your mum plant the garden?
Yeah, so she, when we bought the property back in 1985, it was just a sort of a dry, bare paddock. If you drive around North Canterbury and look at look at any of the paddocks around there, you'll see that just in the summer they're just brown, basically, because it's so dry. And we had sort of an area that was just a swampy sort of overgrown area, sort of down the bottom. And over the years, mum's shaped those into really quite stunning gardens, lots of little walkways, and pretty amazing little adventures that you can go on around the property with, just years and years of planting. I mean, Mum and Dad have travelled a lot over the years and get a lot of inspiration from a lot of the places I've been, a lot of the European gardens and Japanese, Oriental, and then also with a bit of a Kiwi sort of slant on it as well. I should say she does have help from Paula, who's our head horticulturalist at the winery. She's incredible. She's been with us for a long time as well. And we've got, a couple of other people that help Mum out as well. But certainly the gardens have been Mum's kind of driving force and, her vision. That's her happy place. And she's still out there, a good, whenever the sun's shining or whenever it's not raining, basically, she's out there in the garden. She's on her hands and knees pulling weeds out. Driving the ride-on mower, she's not afraid of getting her hands dirty, that's for sure.
Good on her. Well, further to that, what is the actual cellar door experience? Apart from, obviously, it sounds stunningly beautiful. What can we expect? If someone's coming along, it's a Sunday, what wines are on offer? What sort of food? Give us the experience.
So our cellar door it's attached to our deli space. We've sort of reinvented our restaurant space to a deli space. The cellar door, you look through into the barrel hall. So there's a huge glass window so you can sort of look through at what's going on in the barrel hall. Sometimes there's, various activities going on in there. Sometimes there's just big stacks of barrels to look at. we have a pretty big range of wines on offer. So we generally taste about around 10 wines and we just have a fee of $10 for tasting those wines, and it's refundable
pretty
for
good.
Six bottles.
$1 per wine tasting, that's very good these days.
Super reasonable. It used to be $2 back in the day. Want to encourage people to come and taste as many, as many wines. And we generally, we pretty often have extra things open there as well. So we also have a blackboard menu, which is a lot of aged wines from our cellar. So we usually have about 10, aged wines that we pull from our what we call our family library, where we have older stocks of wines. So we put them on the wine board at very reasonable prices to be purchased, and then we have mixed packs there as well. So we have mixed, like, aged. We've got about three or four different vertical packs. You can buy six different vintages of Riesling and six of Pinot and that sort of thing, or a mix of different varietals, a mixed dozen. Cellar door, we train the staff to be very attentive and to provide good level of information if people are wanting to know that information. So we try to keep it quite unsnobby and quite down to earth and just really enjoyable for people that are of any level of wine knowledge. There's a huge big table there, an oak table there that people can sit and we can take small groups there. We keep away from the bus loads, so we don't like taking any groups of larger than 10, because we don't really like the it changes the vibe of the place.
And rowdiness. So, yeah, agreed.
Yeah, there tends to be a little bit less focus on the wine. And it's attached to, as I say, our deli, so that was our restaurant space. There's two stories there of seating. When we changed from a restaurant to a deli, we sort of reconfigured the seating. So there's, Chesterfield couches and, big open fire and lots of loungy spaces. There's tables there as well. And then there's, of course, about 10 acres of, beautiful landscape gardens where people can take. So we have quite a large selection from different sort of artisan producers of deli items from around New Zealand. We've got, a couple of large deli fridges and shelves and things that people can come and select whatever they like, and then we sort of repackage these into these lovely little locally made hand-woven willow baskets, and we put in there everything they need, like plates and, boards and knives and things like that, and they basically take that off and, to any sort of little space they like the look of, and grab a bottle of, a glass or a bottle of something Pegasus Bay. We have a lot of aged wines on the wine list as well, so you grab a 10-year-old bottle of Riesling or whatever it might be. We have a current vintage and aged vintage of everything on there as well. So, people like to come and explore the gardens and choose their own journey. They can go as sort of little or as large as they like, really.
Well, it sounds gorgeous and interesting. You just mentioned the Riesling. We've had a text in from one of our fabulous, very loyal listeners, Kim. Morning, Kim. He says, good morning, Jill. I have recently had some aged Pegasus Bay Riesling, which I was very surprised with, hugely underrated. So there we go. So
I've got an 09. I just noticed, actually, must have had that from almost ACP days. Actually, it's quite dusty, but I just realised on the top of my... I've got a 2009 Riesling, actually. No, you just...
Dust it off and wait till I'm in Sydney.
Riesling was actually... It's a variety that we've all been hugely passionate about as a family, and we didn't plant Riesling initially because everyone in the industry said to Dad that you wouldn't be able to sell it. It was a misunderstood variety, even though, it's considered one of the greats, of all... varieties to the real wine buffs, your average sort of person doesn't really understand it. And so we didn't plant it. And then about 3 years later, my mum, Chris, convinced my dad to plant, I think it was 3 rows of Riesling. And we said, well, if we can't sell it, we'll just drink it ourselves. And my brother Matt made a first wine out of that in 1994. And everyone was making dry Riesling back then because they thought that was kind of what you had to do to be taken seriously because, there was sort of a lot of cheaper, not very well-made sweeter Rieslings awash in the market. And Matt made an off-dry style, but he made it in a very, in a high-quality way. They were low-cropped and had a beautiful balance of acidity. And it actually, people loved it and it sold very quickly. And so much to my father's delight, we planted, more and then more, and it eventually became our biggest selling white variety and still is today. So, Riesling and Pinot Noir are sort of our two main focus, and a third of our vineyards dedicated to Riesling. I'm pretty sure we're the only producer in New Zealand where Riesling is our number one kind of selling variety. We seem to have just quite a special spot for Riesling. We make it in quite a distinctive style. We love it, and we're glad that a lot of other people seem to love it too. We make quite a wide range of different styles. There's 5 different labels of Riesling that we make.
Hey, Ed, one thing that I want to touch on is the Waipara region. I mean, I don't think a lot of people realise there's truffles and obviously fishing, which you're very good at and do on a regular basis. But you have the foraging and wine events. I remember when I was at ACP, the Gourmet Traveller guys were invited. So I don't know if that's a NZ wine thing that they do because they're really good at that. But do you want to touch on, how rich and produce region is?
Yeah, look, it's an incredible region for foraging. That particular event, we haven't held one for a few years. That was originally spearheaded by Angela Clifford, who's a pretty well-known figure in the region. And who knows, perhaps we'll pick it up again at some point. Lot of moving parts to that event. There was a huge amount of work, but it certainly did what we set out, what we hoped that it would do. We basically were bringing in a lot of people from outside the region while they were in New Zealand, and we split into sort of foraging zones, and we had a forager and a winery guide and a chef with each of the groups, with sommeliers and people in the industry, and we just sort of went out for the day and foraged. We'd go out shooting and hunting wild boar, pig, I took the fishing group out in boats up in Kaikoura or Mutanau. We had people, gathering shellfish, wild greens, that sort of thing. And then they all came back to Pegasus Bay, and we had chefs, about 7 different chefs from around New Zealand who came together and just put together these incredible meals that we matched with our wines. So the region is, there's so many foraging opportunities in the region. As I say, I mean, it's the coastline's right there. There's just an abundance of seafood there if you know where to look and how to fish and what to, what to do. And as I say, a lot of, hunting. There's deer and a lot of wild pig and goat and pigeons and all that sort of thing. And a lot of, greens as well, a lot of foraging of, a lot of like coastal greens and other things. So plenty to, get into if you're, mushrooms and that sort of thing. If you're that sort of person, which I am, and I love it.
Hey, one thing that obviously amused me, which was on Instagram, is the wonderful story about your cat. Come on, tell them.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's a bit of a detour to it. But we lived out in the country for about 10 years. We had our house up in Sumner before the earthquake, and we lost that in the earthquake, which was actually turned out to be a positive thing, because we moved out to the country and lived out there near the winery for about 10 years, or just over 10 years. And while we were out there, we bought near the end of our time there, we bought a little white cat called Snowy, and we moved into Christchurch when my boys were getting sort of coming up to high school age. Yeah, the country was great for them when they were younger, but it was time to move into town. So we moved into Christchurch, we bought a house there, and we bought our two cats, Pilchard, a little Japanese bobtail, and then Snowy, who was a Burman, and we kept them inside like we were supposed to do for a couple of weeks, and then released them outside and did everything we thought we were supposed to do there. And then Snowy disappeared, and we sort of thought, well, he'll turn up at some point. And then after about 6 months, we thought, well, we're definitely never going to see Snowy again. Yeah, but then about a year and a half later, I got a phone call from somebody who said, I think we've got you a cat. And I said, well, are you sure? And they said, look, it's been hanging out in the forest behind the house, and it sort of comes in every now and then. It's pretty feral, but we've been feeding it. And we went down to the vet, and we got a scanner, and we scanned it, and it's chipped, so we've got it. And so I went round, and lo and behold, there was Snowy. It was pretty snarly and scratchy, and I managed to throw a towel over him and grab him and put him in a cage, and he's been happily with us for about 4 years now. And I think he got back to our house, and I think he just thought, what the hell was I thinking, because this is way better than he was. That's definitely looking up.
Did Snowy remember you?
Definitely not initially, but I think pretty quickly he did. What was that?
And with the other cat, how were they together?
Yeah, the other cat recognised him immediately. They hated each other. I think that was probably the reason for him running away. The other one was the dominant one. So, but now they coexist quite happily together. So there's a story with a happy ending for you.
One other question I have for you. With so many siblings, and, you know, you boys especially, what was the worst thing one of you did as a teenager? Surely you got a great story from one of you.
I cannot say that on.
Go on.
No way. I could tell you maybe the 10th worst thing.
And was it you?
Well, I could really only tell a story about me, I suppose. I when I was a sort of late teenage years, I mean, all of my sort of naughty bits were really sort of between the ages of about sort of 14 and maybe 18. But I did get arrested under the name of my brother Mike, because he was always pretty squeaky clean, and you know, so it was only for a very minor thing, but I said I was driving without, I didn't have a license, and I said that I was my brother Mike, thinking that'd be fine, but they ended up arresting me, and I got my finger and photo taken as Michael Donaldson. I had a court summons as Michael Donaldson.
Wow.
And he was in Dunedin studying law, so I had to sort of come clean on that one. Anyway, that was just one that jumped to mind. So, but yeah, I can assure you, it was all sort of all around that testosterone sort of trying to kind of work out where the boundaries are in life, which thankfully I found before anything got too bad.
It's hilarious. Look, Ed, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I do know that Sue has had a great idea. We've got some quick fire questions for you. So, Sue, maybe just the next 2 minutes.
Look, I do. I think I know the answer to the first one. Dogs or cats?
Definitely cats these days. Yep, used to be a dog man, now I'm a cat man.
Tea or coffee?
Definitely coffee.
Meat or potatoes?
Definitely meat.
Chardonnay or Riesling?
Oh, that's bloody hard. I have to say Chardonnay, because, you know, it just goes with everything.
Yeah.
But Riesling is a very, very close second. Yeah.
Okay, so what's your signature dish?
Probably, we've got a few, but I'll say probably a flounder, which has been smothered with a whole flounder, smothered with butter, coriander, chili, a lot of pepper and salt, and just put in a really, really hot oven until the skin starts to blister, and pull that out with a little wedge of lemon. Yeah, that's a good time right there.
What wine?
Yeah.
Probably a very rich, a dry Riesling, or off-dry Riesling for that, but something very sort of big and rich, yeah.
Nice.
And what's your favourite part of New Zealand?
Well, look, outside of Canterbury, of course. No, look, probably my favourite spot is actually in North Canterbury, which is up in the high country in North Canterbury. It's the Lake Sumner National Park, and there's a huge lake up. It's got tens of thousands of acres of native bush, and there's a huge lake up there called Lake Sumner. And we go up there fishing for trout and salmon, you know, every 6 months or so with some friends. And there's just no one there because it's quite hard to get to and not a lot of people know about it. And it's absolute paradise up there. That's my spiritual.
And lastly, what wine have you been drinking from New Zealand that you're enjoying?
I've been drinking quite a few bits and pieces there. I drink a good mix of sort of things from outside of New Zealand and in New Zealand, but I'd have to say probably Kumu Rivers, even just the estate Chardonnay. They're 2001 at the moment. I've just had a bottle of it recently, or a couple of. Really enjoying also the Rosie's Block Chardonnay from Newdorf as well. I mean, look, there's so many others, but they're two that I'm really enjoying at the moment.
Keep going with them. These are fun. And we've got to wait for Ethan to come back anyway.
Okay, you're in Melbourne. Favourite bar or restaurant?
Favorite bar and restaurant. So I really love Grossi Florentina. You know, I just, for that old school Italian, you know, they just do that so well. So many others, you know, so many others there as well. I'm just trying to, there's something on the tip of my tongue that it's again very old school, but you know, Flower Drum's always good for a kind of high end sort of. I just went there for my son's 14th birthday recently, and he was in absolute heaven. I must say, I haven't actually hit the bars in Melbourne for a while. I seem to be coming over here. I'm either on work or over here catching up with my son. So I'm a little bit, I used to go to Cookie quite a bit back in the day. That was always a good time. I mean, the Supper Club was always good too. But, there's probably a heap of new, really cool happening spots that I'm unaware of at the moment. So I need to get myself out there and get a bit more up to date, I think.
When I was there last, I popped down to Mavita and just sat up there at the bar and, of course, you know, sat next to a winemaker, and someone came over from Vas Felix and, you know, who was there, and a whole crowd of wine people. So it's great if you just by yourself just to hop up at the bar. And the other place I went to, which you've got to go find for brekkie, was Higher Ground, Joe. Is it phenomenal? Yes. Phenomenal.
Yep. Right. Okay.
I had a really good meal at Supernatural or Supernormal.
Supernormal. Yes.
Supernormal. Yeah, I had a really good meal there when I was over here with my kids. That was really good. And then there's that. What's that iconic sort of Chinese restaurant in Chinatown that's kind of down the laneway? It's on the tip of my tongue. It's which is not very helpful, but it's been there forever. It's off the main sort of the main drag there. Hopefully it'll come to me before the end of the show. But
I tell you what, if anyone knows what it is, text it in, because now I'm intrigued.
Yeah, it's upstairs. There's an upstairs bit and a downstairs bit. It's all, you know, classically, it's just really rough and ready. The downstairs bit's a little bit flasher, but the food's incredible, and it's been there forever. It's a bit of an institution. Shark Fin House as well is always a good spot for yum cha or dim sum, which I love.
Yes, yes. Good old gimlet. Like, I love gimlet. And there's the beautiful Lorraine, is that it? Gorgeous French. But I mean, Melbourne is just, it's just the food and wine heaven, isn't it?
Coda as well. Coda's yes. Incredible. Yeah, for that sort of modern Asian, got an incredible wine list. And Tonka, their Indian venue as well is pretty incredible. Yeah.
It's not Chin Chin that you're thinking of Chinese, no, because that's
not. Although I do love Chin Chin, the line sometimes puts me off. But
the tables are so close together. You're literally, it's like everyone's sitting on one long communal table. Yes,
the supper inn. I think is
cool. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've gone to like half of Melbourne by the sound of it.
Look. I love to eat and drink. So, and Melbourne's got the best, Sydney's incredible too. But what you guys have over here is incredible in terms of just amazing food, amazing restaurants, amazing culture and dining culture. It's great.
So look, Ed, thank you so much for spending your Sunday morning with us. We have actually just gone a little over time, but your stories are so good. I love the cat story. By the way, very quickly, I think it's really cool that you as a winery don't have a straight Sav Blanc in your range, at least at the moment. You've got the Sav Sem, but not a straight Sav Blanc. And I'm like, I've never seen that in a New Zealand winery. So I think that's a cool differentiator. And I'd love to talk more about that another time. But thank you so much. And Suze, thank you very much for getting Ed on, because that's awesome.